And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is business, business, business. Each of my guests is explaining his expertise in one facet of business. My next guest is the antidote for the challenging job market. He'll realign our thinking away from traditional corporate jobs and introduce us to opportunities with great upside potential and very little competition from his book, 101 Weird Ways to Make Money. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation or ask a question, you can call us at 639-0008. And keep that number handy because we'll be giving away two sandwiches or two salads from Urbane Cafe, either one of their two locations in Ventura or in Oxnard. We'll be doing that a little bit later in the show. My next guest, Steve Gilman, was born in Bay City, Michigan. Reading and being in the woods occupied much of his childhood. Steve traveled across the United States at age 16, mostly on buses and by hitchhiking. I guess it was a much kinder, gentler time back then. At 17, he hitchhiked to Mexico with a notarized permission slip from his parents in order to cross the borders. At some point in his life, he got his high school diploma, but after a few college classes, he dropped out to start studying and learning about things that really mattered. In his life, Steve has had dozens of jobs, which makes him uniquely qualified for today's interview. He traveled to Ecuador in 2001. He climbed to the summit of Mount Chimborazo, and he met his now wife, Anna. They were married later in the fall of 2001. Along the way with Anna as his inspiration, Steve started to do something with his writing, initially online and then later in print. His online business has done well. Steve writes about brain power, politics, travel, economics, the mind, backpacking, interventions, and just ideas in general. And fortunately for him, he makes money doing that. Joining us, hi Steve, how are you today?
Good.
Well, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being our guest. Been looking forward to this interview because your book is just filled with some wild and wacky types of jobs, and we'll get into some of the more unusual ones in just a minute. But while these jobs are, they're fun to read about in your book, why would anybody want to do any of the 101 jobs that you have listed in the book?
There are a few good reasons. One of them is that many of the less common jobs have less competition. So it makes it a little bit easier to get into those jobs or businesses, and it also means they have a bit more potential for pay or profit. And sometimes they're just more interesting as well.
All right. Well, that's good. Do these jobs require any special creativity? Is it just, you know, play with somebody's creative genes to be able to do this?
Well, some of them certainly do. I mean, you know, some of the more creative ones, like doing temporary tattoos at fairs or, you know, those types of jobs in their niche comedy, you know, there's a certain amount of creativity, and other ones, they don't require as much. You know, being a repo man or a worm grunter are both relatively simple jobs.
Well, we'll get into both of those in just a minute. But, Steve, do you see any of the 101 jobs that you've got listed in your book actually replacing traditional income that you might get from a corporate job or a job in a business?
Quite a few of them, actually. For example, David Mark started Geese Police, which is a company that uses border collies to chase geese off of golf courses and other large green areas. And that was started small, and he built it into a million-dollar business, which he later sold, I believe.
Wow, Geese
Police. That's a good example.
Yeah, that is. That's big money. All right, well, that's interesting. So there's a lot of, as you say in the title or the subtitle of the book, a lot of upside potential of these jobs that are out there. So let's take a look at some of the more fun ways that there are to make money that you've listed in your book. And we don't have time to do all 101, so I just randomly went through and picked out a couple. But the first one was auto repossession. Now, that was interesting. Tell me about that, because you yourself have done auto repo, haven't you?
Yeah, years ago I did it for quite a while, and it was fun at the time. It's definitely something I'd recommend for younger people. You know, I'm in my late 40s now. I wouldn't want to do it again because we did have conflicts from time to time. We had a mob come out of a bar to defend their friend's car one time and throw things at us. So there is a certain amount of excitement and risk involved.
Did you have to pack heat for that, Steve?
We didn't. We mostly were working small towns of northern Michigan. I kept a baseball bat in the car just to, in case I needed to defend myself. And in that case, I actually ended up running through the bar with it to get to the payphone to call the police. But
All right. So, but and it just should be noted that you were actually not only doing your job, but you were within the law to be an auto repossessor. So you weren't doing anything outside of the law.
We were all by the book.
All right. Well, that's good. Sort of along those same lines, Bounty Hunter. And if you turn on television, there's a show, Dog the Bounty Hunter. You kind of see a little bit of what that life is about. And it, I guess, become popularized because of the show Dog the Bounty Hunter. Is there still upside potential in being a bounty hunter, Steve?
Well, there is, and some bounty hunters make good money. The safer way to make more money, of course, is to eventually transition into being a bail bondsman and, you know, getting off the streets and, you know, making the profits at the other end. But there's definitely potential even as a job.
So there's a career path that you can go from bounty hunter up to bail bondsman, and that makes some sense. My guest is Steve Gilman, author of the book 101 Weird Ways to Make Money. Steve, here's one that I found interesting and a little bit disconcerting. You've got metal detecting. Now, metal detecting I've always associated with older retired people walking along the beach in floppy sun hats. How can you make money metal detecting?
Well, there are a few ways you can do it. Generally, people do it as a hobby, and, you know, if you peruse the treasure hunting forums, you rarely find anybody who's making more than a few hundred dollars a month just coin shooting on the beach with their metal detectors. But you could use it as a way into bigger treasure hunting. You may remember Mel Fisher finding the Atocha, which was a shipwreck that was, in the end, worth tens of millions of dollars. But the other way to go, the easier way to go, would be to use it as experience to get into selling the equipment. There's a big market for treasure hunting equipment. It's grown bigger in recent years, and you could do that online or from a store. Online is probably the better way to go now, but that would be a way to make it into something that actually could make a living or something even more than that.
Oh, very clever. My guest is Steve Gilman. Now, here's one that appealed to me on a couple of different levels, and I thought it was interesting, but was absolutely flabbergasted when I found out how much one person actually made doing this, and that is golf ball recoverer. What is that? And you say that somebody made $100,000 a year doing golf ball recovery. I find that hard to believe. How did it happen?
Yeah, there have been a few examples of that that have been reported where people have made six figures from it. There's two ways that people get golf balls to resell. There's what they call the poachers who sneak into golf courses and use rakes to pull them off the bottom of the ponds, and then they sell them on eBay or on Craigslist after they clean them up and retail them. But the guys who make the bigger money actually collect them by the thousands, and they use scuba gear, and they have permission, of course, to be on the golf course, and they wholesale them out to places then that retail them. And they only get, when you wholesale them, you only get as little as 11 cents a piece compared to selling them for up to a dollar a piece if you retailed them. But you don't have to process them as much yourself, and, of course, you can sell them in large volume.
And
so they sell thousands per day. They gather rather thousands per day, and they sell them to these big companies that then retail them online.
And you don't have to run away and do this in the dark of the night either.
But exactly.
Let me ask you, though, about the scuba diving and the more conventional way of doing this. Does the golf course take a fee for doing that? Do they charge you money to go into their lakes and into their streams in order to recover these golf balls?
Yeah, typically they have been, and I'm not sure that all of them do now or not, but they often will charge as much as a few cents per golf ball. So you basically pay a fee per golf ball or for a set amount of time or whatever the arrangement is, but it usually works out to a few cents per golf ball.
I see. Very interesting. My guest is Steve Gilman, author of the book 101 Weird Ways to Make Money, Cricket Farming, Repossessing Cars, and Other Jobs with Big Upside and Not Much Competition. And that brings us to a whole category in your book, Steve, that I've lumped into a category that I call agribusiness. And this is agriculture business combined. And one that you've mentioned right off the top at the early part of the show was worm grunting and farming. What is worm grunting and how do you make money at it?
Well, worm grunting and farming are actually two different activities. Ah. Although you could do both, and that might be a good way to diversify your business. Worm grunting is collecting the worms in the wild. Usually, you need a permit to do this on public lands, and it's a cheap permit, but you pound a stake that's called a stob into the ground, and then you take a rope, which is a metal piece, and you slide it across it to create vibrations, and the worms come to the surface, where you gather them up, of course, and put them into dozens and sell them retail, or you can sell them wholesale to somebody that will then retail them to fishermen and to people who use them to feed various pets.
I see. And are there open markets where you would sell these to the fishermen or to the pet buyers? How does that work? How do you find your buyers once you've harvested your worms?
Well, there are some buyers that buy large quantities to retail and then sell them. And if you went that route, then you would ship them off in quantities of 1,000 or more at a time. You can also package them yourself as you collect them and then go to bait shops in a given geographical area and sell them wholesale to the bait shops. And you'll get more that way, of course, selling them by the dozen, because they sell them there at the bait shops for as much as $4 to $5 a dozen, depending on the area.
Wow, amazing. All right, another one, and this one that really caught my attention, was cricket farmer. Talk to me about that.
Well, cricket farming is something that quite a few people have played around with. That's another one that is used for bait for fishermen, but crickets are also used to feed salamanders and frogs and all sorts of those kinds of pets and zoo animals. And small players in this market sell them 250 at a time for $8 to $12 and ship them through the U.S. Postal Service. The larger players like Gans, they make an estimated $10 to $20 million from their cricket farm. They sell them in large quantities to places like Disney and other places that have many animals that need them. But it's something that can be started small, because you can start them with in a plastic tub or an aquarium. They breed fairly fast. They eat almost any kind of vegetable scraps you can throw in there. And so it's something someone can start small and eventually build very large.
Cricket farming. Now, you send the crickets through the mail. I just can't even imagine packaging up a bunch of crickets, chirping crickets, putting it into the USPS where they wouldn't have some sort of concern about that, especially post 9/11, where anthrax and everything else was going through the mail. Do you need a special permit to transport crickets across state lines?
No. You have to pack them a certain way, and you'd be surprised what gets shipped through the mail. I worked in a post office, and I remember little baby chicks chirping all the time, and they got shipped through the mail with all sorts of other animals.
Wow. What was the most interesting thing that you remember being shipped through the mail from your time at the post office?
You know, I'm trying to remember if it was bees or scorpions. It was one or the other that was shipped through our facility. And so they actually allow a much wider range of animals than you might think, as long as they're, you know, packaged the way they want them packaged.
Amazing. Well, I would never have thought of shipping scorpions across state lines. So there you go. There's one up on me. My guest is Steve Gilman. We're talking about 101 weird ways to make money. Also in the agribusiness is maggot farmer. Now, that's probably one that I wouldn't lean towards. But what is a maggot farmer? And why do we need maggots?
Well, maggots are used for, we're back to fishermen again. That's one of the uses. They are used as bait. But the more common use is the maggots that become certain types of flies that are used to pollinate. They're put around plants with a little mesh net, and then when they hatch out into adult flies, they pollinate the plants, and so they're used in vegetable farming. And maggot farming is a stinky, awful business in some ways, but it has made good money for some people, definitely.
All right.
I've seen on Mike Rowe's Dirty Job show, he actually did an episode on maggot farming where he visited and fed the maggots raw meat and other things.
Oh, my goodness. I'll have to catch that episode. My guest is Steve Gilman. Now, Steve, let's turn our attention to jobs that are a little bit less grody and a little bit more traditional or mainstream. One that I liked was mobile oil changer. Now, that has a real ring. So tell me about mobile oil changing, what's involved with that, and how are people making money at it?
Well, mobile oil change is just what it sounds like. You take the oil change equipment to their house or place of business to change their oil. And, of course, the convenience is what makes it worth it to people. And it isn't a huge investment, but it does require a little bit. The equipment is probably as much as $20,000 or $25,000 to get set up properly.
Wow.
But it is something that can be financed. So people have started this with a few thousand dollars down and financed the equipment. And the bigger money is not in the individual sales, but in setting up contracts or arrangements at offices, for example, where you can get offer a discount if they can get 10 people to sign up for an oil change, and you can do them all right there in the parking lot, because you have a little more efficiency that way.
Absolutely. And that becomes recurring revenue, because you need to change your oil anywhere between 3,000 and every 7,000 miles. So you would just schedule a time to return back to that office park and do everybody's oil all at the same time. Is that the basic premise?
Exactly. Yeah. You'd build up a clientele that way, so you'd have repeat business.
All right, great. Now, another one that I saw that is actually very popular, I see this advertised in a lot of different places, online product reviewers. There's so many ads all over the internet, all over the magazines for this type of business. Can extra money be made? It seems like this is a fairly crowded field.
It is a crowded field, but it probably depends on, you know, how well you optimize your websites, of course, and there's more potential perhaps in the smaller niches, because you're right, in some areas, I mean, if you're going to review get-rich-quick online products, well, you're going to have a hard time competing in an area like that. But I have a site, for example, that's a review site on meditation CDs, and that's a little bit less crowded, and so it's possible to make some money there.
All right. Well, that's good to know. I'm glad that there's money there. Here's one that's a sign of the times, Steve, and I just love this one. A real estate broker in virtual worlds. What does that involve, and how do you make money at it?
Well, on websites like Second Life and others where people have characters in virtual worlds, there is actually valuable real estate. Initially, it was just that the people playing the game wanted to have some more status or importance or fun in the game, and so they were willing to pay a couple hundred dollars for a house in this world. But it went far beyond that, because corporations are starting to advertise on billboards in these virtual worlds. And so if you have a place where lots of players come by, so you have lots of eyes on a billboard, then it becomes much more valuable. And people have actually made hundreds of thousands of dollars building up their online real estate and then selling it for cash.
Yeah, amazing. It is a sign of the times. My guest is Steve Gilman, author of the book 101 Weird Ways to Make Money, Cricket Farming, Repossessing Cars, and Other Jobs with Big Upside and Not Much Competition. Steve, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, 101 Weird Ways to Make Money?
Well, it's aimed at people who are looking for something new to do, and you know, opens up their eyes to the possibilities out there. It's also just a fun read for those who are happy with what they're doing but just like to read about these things like I do. And one of the things, like I said at the start, that these odd ways have is a little bit less competition. And so because of that, they have you know, some more potential and a little more security as well. You know, it's not one that I would want to do, but if, for example, you take something like septic tank cleaning, you don't very often hear about these companies going out of business while restaurants are falling left and right. And so you have a little more job security, and you can make a lot of money in some of these. And, of course, some of them are more interesting and less dirty. But
yeah. Well, there's always big money to be made in poop, Steve. If
That's
people
right.
are interested in your book, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, you can type in the title, 101 Weird Ways to Make Money, and on the first page of results, you'll certainly see videos that I've put online in various places, and as well as links to Amazon and Barnes & Noble and the places where they can buy the book. And on my site, unusualwaystomakemoney.com, or my website, everywaytomakemoney.com, I have some information about the book on those sites as well.
Ah, that is great. Steve, thank you so much for being our special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.